Welcome back to The New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts. In this podcast, Podcast 366, a local Minnesota newspaper's obsession with North Dakota's oil boom or bust has really got me fired up. Traffic congestion in Minneapolis and St. Paul supposedly is growing, but is it? Another thing that is a coverage issue that is driving me crazy, and if it is, why is it? It's not what you think. Especially when you consider the nature of work, something I've been talking about for a long time on these podcasts, so we'll talk about that. What federal agency is the poster child for the but not me government? I'll give you two guesses on that one. And it seems like both sides of the political spectrum think Americans are moving left. I'll talk about that and more in Podcast 366. Now, I talk a lot about manufacturing on the Bob Davis Podcast. I talk a lot about technology on the podcasts. And of course, I'm going to talk about technology in this podcast too, but and how people do what they do and their work and everything. But let's talk a little bit about manufacturing and Bachland R&D. First of all, I've told you that there's a lot of developments at Bachland so far in the new year. If you're in the manufacturing business, or you're interested in what Bachland can do for you, there's an updated all-new Bachland.com, and it shows you what they do and how they do it, as well as some new products that they're featuring. I should also tell you that John Bachland is going to be hosting a webinar on June 2nd, 2015 on Bachland.com, focusing on 3D printing / additive manufacturing for production planning and tooling. And those are actually pretty popular webinars that he's been doing. Also, check out the links to Tara Bachland's Healthy Life blog, because living healthy is really an important central value to the company. And we've discussed values as well. But here are the main things to remember about Bachland.com. Wicked fast turnaround times. Innovative solutions, like the expandable collet pin, for example, and the website. Real client service, and I've told you about that, as well as real resources about Bachland at Bachland.com. And if you're interested in what they can do for you, contact Joe Dorn or Andy Bleck at Bachland.com. Find out what these values, energy, wisdom, knowledge, and imagination, can do for your company today, and check out the resources at Bachland.com, Bachland.com, and sign up for the webinar on June 2nd with John Bachland. Well, I've got to start with the train derailment up in North Dakota, just north of Bismarck. This was an oil train, a derailment, an explosion. The cause of the derailment has yet to be determined. They had to evacuate a small town. Of course, this is played out, literally splayed all over the Minneapolis-St. Paul media, led by the Star Tribune, which, for the life of me, I don't think since I've been reading stories about the oil boom in North Dakota, I have never been able to find a positive story about North Dakota in the Star Tribune. They seem to be unable to find anything good to say about anything that happens in relation to the oil energy boom, which North Dakota has enjoyed the last few years. And now the oil boom is threatened due to the drop in the price of oil, and the Star Tribune just can't get enough of the boom and bust story, and they keep pointing this out. It never points out, none of the stories that I've read in the Tribune ever points out, that the difference between the type of oil exploration that they're doing now, which is fracking, which is really possible because of technology, versus the old days back in the 60s and 70s, is that they can scale up and scale down. They can do what they're doing with much fewer employees than ever before. So it's not going to be the disaster that the editors at the Tribune would gleefully celebrate. And as I said, I don't think I've ever read a positive story about North Dakota from this insular, parochial, and paranoid newspaper. You know, they send out this circular every Saturday, which it's just stuffed in my mailbox, and I didn't ask for it. It just comes. I wouldn't subscribe to the Tribune. In fact, I actually steal their stories from the website, and I won't tell you how. They don't apparently know how it's done, but I will never subscribe to this paper because it's a terrible paper. And the piece that I'm talking about that was stuffed in my mailbox, usually these things are devoted to things like flowers and fixing up your backyard and, you know, getting ready for winter and things like that. This was a whole piece about the oil bust destroying families and so forth, clearly politically oriented to this story that they continually play out, which is, oh, those people in North Dakota, they tried to get ahead and look what happened to them, because the Tribune does not want any kind of precious metal exploration or mining to take place in northern Minnesota. So you'll never see a positive story about that type of natural resource capitalization that you see in Texas and in North Dakota. And you're also seeing this play out in relation to the oil boom in Texas as well. You know, it was all oil, it was all the cheap dollar, and now look at them. And remember that all of these outlets touted the benefits of cheap gas and how it was going to act like a tax cut, because as you know, with these people being Keynesians and religious Keynesians, you know, they firmly believe that all we need to do is prime the pump by giving the consumer some free money, and miraculously, the economy will transform itself. So I'm going through all these stories about the train derailment. It's BNSF, which of course is owned by Warren Buffett, and there is much hand-wringing about the environmental damage. He has never called to carpet on this at all. It's always some representative from BNSF, never Uncle Warren. And as I'm reading through all this stuff, it's so obvious to me that the easiest solution to the train transport problem with oil would have been to build the Keystone Pipeline. If we had the pipeline, if we had built it, those trains would be unnecessary. But then Uncle Warren wouldn't be able to make any money shipping all of that oil, quote unquote, out east, as the Tribune featured so prominently the other day. So if you're looking for someone to blame for the environmental problems that may come from transporting oil by train, you have no further to look than the biggest crony capitalist in the country and hypocrite of them all, Warren Buffett, and of course, President Obama, for refusing to build the pipeline despite bipartisan legislation to do so. Yes, the U.S. is the largest energy producer in the world thanks to fracking. It has changed our position vis-a-vis foreign policy, and it's a good thing, and the Keystone Pipeline would be a good thing because it would allow more export of U.S. resources, which benefits Americans. And there are many other benefits to the so-called fracking boom in this country and elsewhere. Just don't expect to read about it in your local newspaper if you live in the Twin Cities or really anywhere, because no one likes this story. Along the same lines, screaming headlines this week in the Star Tribune again, which shows congestion, and also on Channel 5's page, KSTP-TV's page, showing congestion is growing in the Twin Cities. And you're supposed to go, oh my God. It's interesting because you read the story and it says, the worst days are Tuesday mornings and Thursday evenings. And I looked at that and I thought, well, what does that tell you about Minnesota? And it goes back to that podcast I did about Minnesotans politically. We Minnesotans, supposedly vaunted for our work ethic, apparently are taking a lot of Fridays and Mondays off. And I wonder how many of those people are state workers. Now, the other thing about this study about congestion, and I'm telling you this because you're going to hear a lot about congestion and you're going to encounter a lot of congestion this weekend. The studies were done by MnDOT and by the Met Council. The Met Council study says, oh, ridership on public transit is up, and in particular, the trains. These are two agencies which have a vested interest in more transportation spending, particularly a gas tax increase, a substantial gas tax increase on top of the $1 billion surplus that this state has and the billions already collected and squandered on light rail projects and other quote-unquote transportation projects. They've already conceded that LRT does nothing about congestion, and they are now falling back on its value as a development tool. If you're paying attention to all of the discussion about the fact that the LRT is now way over budget, $370 some million over budget. And in fact, the value of the LRT as a, quote, development tool is also a lie, because national studies show the development doesn't occur unless it is subsidized by further government spending or tax breaks, such as tax increment financing for developers. If you want to know more about that, do a search for Randall O'Toole on the podcast page, and you can listen to two podcasts that Randall and I did last summer in which he outlines all of that. And when that is exposed, It comes down to the supposed fact that the train is shiny and clean and new, and young people like it. And then I was shocked to read this article that talked about the need for this. And it talks about how, well, downtown needs to be connected to Eden Prairie because that's where the jobs are. But see, the whole justification for building these trains is that the jobs are supposedly downtown and people need to take the train to get downtown to the jobs. Now, suddenly they're in Eden Prairie and people from downtown are going to go in the other direction. The bottom line is this. Minnesota ranks 35th, actually the Twin Cities ranks 35th in congestion nationwide. Now, you might think that's a big deal, 35th. Remember, there's 50 states and we rank 35th. What rank is Minneapolis and St. Paul as far as the top 100 markets? Any guesses? We rank 16th or 15th, depending on what study you look at. So we rank 35th in congestion and we are market 16. So we are well below our market rank. And the thing is, if you take the time to actually understand statistics, then you really have to look at index levels in terms of outperforming rank if you want to know if you have a problem. We aren't anywhere near having a problem with congestion in this state. First of all, if you go to work really early, if you go to work at 5:30 and 6 o'clock, you're not going to encounter congestion versus going to work at 7:45. Secondly, traffic congestion is generally caused, in my opinion, by MnDOT. And we don't know how much of this study was done in summer months, and so forth, because just this week we learned about MnDOT doing stupid things like putting up signs and causing huge traffic jams on the Mendota Bridge recently, and by removing the bridges on Minnetonka and taking their sweet time rebuilding them as they widen 100 and improve the on-off ramps in the Western Metro. 169 these days is a parking lot at peak times, and I never see MnDOT working in non-peak traffic times. They quit at 3 p.m. leaving a mess for everyone. And it just leads me to conclude that the people running Minnesota are idiots. You know, you go to other markets, you go to Washington, D.C., even you go to Chicago, you go to these other places, and they are working on stuff 24 hours a day to get it finished. Even in Los Angeles, which is probably the number one most congested market, if it isn't, it's close, they work overnight on these things. So when they decide to put something up, they don't waste time. Why is it that our people are never working on the weekends, and they don't work overnights except in an emergency? Why is that? And it's because they have to pay these guys, well, I'm assuming they have to pay these guys overtime and double overtime because they're all union employees and it's prevailing wage and it's nonsense. The people running this state are just plain idiots. Whether it's MnSure or MnDOT or the DNR or education or whatever it is, the state government's supposed competence is a joke, and people really see it when they are out there traveling. And what do they tell us? Well, it's because we don't have enough trains. I mean, it's beyond belief. Moreover, you know, we get into this question of how people are going to work in the next 25 to 50 years. You know, I had occasion a few years ago to meet a really great guy who was one of the designers of the Minneapolis and St. Paul freeway system. I'm almost positive he is no longer with us. And I didn't know that he did that. I asked him what he did when he was working because he said he was retired and he's an old guy. And he said, I was an engineer. And then we started talking about where he worked. And he said, we originally designed the Minneapolis-St. Paul freeway system to essentially be a clone of Chicago. We built an overcapacitized freeway system. That was our goal. And we were told to scale it back because we were told the market will never grow that big. This was 50, 60 years ago when they were designing our freeway system, which is why we have so many roads like 162 that are two lanes, and which is why we have a freeway system that if you actually look at it and you've traveled around the country and seen other places, our freeway system for the market size feels constricted and small because it was designed deliberately to be that way because the idiots that were running our state government at the time wouldn't believe that it could ever grow to the size that it is. So that same kind of mentality is in effect when it comes to their vision of what the city is going to look like. And the city, you know, there's an old thing in architecture, which is that form follows function. Function does, you know, you don't do form first, you look at function first. And we really need to look at how people are working. And one of the podcasts I did from California, I had no idea that it was going to be as prophetic as it turned out to be. And it was podcast three, I believe it's 340. 48, and it was the podcast about freelance work. I interviewed a young guy who's a freelance worker out there in the movie business, right? And it's basically Hollywood, and it's the west part of Los Angeles, but I floated the idea of whether Los Angeles's model of freelance work is the model of the future. You know, you go out to restaurants on Monday night and Tuesday night and they're packed. People are going all different ways. They're using the freeway system in all different ways because ad hoc crews come together on a project basically as 1099ers and work together to build the project. Then they move on to the next project. That's how the movie business worked. And it's the model of how the movie business works today. People are not all employed by studios. They're employed, they work for themselves and they freelance. Suddenly, this concept has appeared as a feature in the New York Times, which is entitled, What Can Hollywood Tell Us About the Future of Work? Which I couldn't believe because I don't know whether great minds think alike or now I'm prepping the big outlets with the Bob Davis podcast. But it's a great question. Projects get done in all different parts of the metro at different times with different people doing different things, and there's no set pattern. If this is the future, and this is the future that the technology actually enables. So think of employees as Uber, okay? So they're called in on specific projects to do specific things. They do the job and they move on to the next thing. And it can be any kind of work, legal work. It can be real estate work. It can be all these different things. So you've got people moving all around the metro, not going into one central location. And what happens is that big companies no longer need to employ large groups of people in their home offices because those people are all 1099. And in some businesses, they're working at home. In some businesses, they're showing up at a specific location to do a specific job. So suddenly, the downtown model may not be the model. And what may happen is companies may rent office space or rent parts of an office space to use at specific times in specific locations. So there's no predictor of where people are going to be taking their trips. And I will tell you that studies show most trips are not to downtown in the Twin Cities. Most businesses in the Twin Cities are in, you know, along the Beltway, basically along 494 and along the freeway system, and they're out in the suburbs. And they're in those low-slung buildings and industrial centers that house manufacturers and that house accounting firms, and then, you know, they're not downtown because companies cannot afford to be downtown, and they are not going to force their employees to come down and pay for parking and everything else. So we're building a transportation system that is downtown centric because our supposedly competent leaders, Peter McLaughlin and the people at the Met Council and our illustrious governor and a lot of Republicans and Democrats at the legislature think that building up the downtown area is the way to go. Well, it may not be that that is what we'll need in the future. And if we end up following Los Angeles, as the country usually does in terms of how we construct work, people aren't going to be going downtown. They're going to be going from Eden Prairie to Plymouth. They're going to be going from St. Louis Park to, you know, Mendota Heights. They're not going to be going downtown. So you have to build a road system specifically, not a transportation system, but a road system that allows for maximum capacity at all times because people are going to be moving all over the metro doing different things at different times. New metros and new workflow will not be like the 1900s because the technology is different. So form follows function, and cities are architecture. And as I've said many, many times, we live in the past. We live in a place we've already built. We cannot see the future. So the past is with us, but the technology of today doesn't necessarily mean that we have to live in the kinds of cities that we built for people in the 1910s and 20s when, for example, Manhattan was a manufacturing center, right? Now it's a financial center, and it's a creative center. It's a completely different kind of situation. These guys just can't seem to understand this because they're so driven to this concept of a European central city, which the United States doesn't need. And which the United States won't use unless it works. And what they're talking about isn't going to work, and it costs a fortune. So what needs to happen? Well, first of all, transportation transportation systems need to be curtailed and forced to live on their own revenue, because if they did, they wouldn't function. For example, the North Star wouldn't be around. And you probably don't know this because the much vaunted Star Tribune would never report this, but one of the reasons we have problems with the oil trains is that the North Star blocks the one rail line that the BNSF uses to move these things across the metropolitan area. So we have a congestion problem which has been created by legislation when it comes to the oil trains in the Twin Cities, because these guys are stupid. So money needs to be dedicated only to roads and bridges specifically, and only until the road system is built to accommodate what is really going on should we consider any kind of public transit. And the only thing that I would be in favor of doing, as I've talked about, is I believe in buses. I don't know that we need giant buses, number one. I think an Uber-type public transportation system would be great, and I believe that in 20 years, the public transit system will be obviated by driverless car technology, because you'll just be able to order a car to take you wherever you want to go. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I'd be perfectly in favor of the government dedicating right-of-ways for rail lines, but the rail lines, by law, should have to be commercial businesses, because if they were commercial businesses, then we wouldn't have rail lines unless they could make money. And the thing is, they are perennial money losers year after year after year after year. And the larger they get, the more they cost, and they're never funded at a level that allows for the luxury of riding the trains. Furthermore, and I'll leave it at this, everybody loves light rail and public transit, but only about 4.5 to 5% of the country nationwide uses it. So we're talking about high density areas where ridership is higher. Places like Minneapolis and St. Paul, which are very low density, it's a money loser, and it's always going to be a money loser. So I just wanted to point that out, because you're not going to see that reported in the media that ill serves this market. So people need to know those facts. And then we get to this question of politics. Lots of being written these days about whether America is moving left. I talked about this as well in a recent podcast about Minnesota politics. Polls show brand identification and party affiliation regarding Republicans and Democrats, and they show that the Republicans aren't doing very well lately. First of all, don't believe them. I don't think anybody can tell you how this country is going, what direction it's moving. It's very difficult to work that out. It's a social, it's a political, it's an emotional thing for individuals. I certainly think that the terms that they're testing have changed. Conservative can mean anything. I think it's a useless term. And I also think liberal is a useless term. So the conservative-liberal standoff is old school. People are changing. They don't want to hear about that anymore. But they are concerned about issues. And the thing about it is, just like form follows function, events drive these polls, and they drive politics, not brand awareness. You have to look at what is happening, not how people are identifying in polls, especially polls being done, you know, a full year and a half before the election. Now, if you do look at it this way, it doesn't necessarily bode well for Republicans, although maybe it does. I hesitate to mention that early data show that Hillary Clinton could start the race ahead in enough states in 2016 to assemble 200 plus electoral votes. She only needs 270 to win, so it's an uphill battle already for Republicans. And we're still, you know, what are we doing? Republicans are talking about the Clinton Global Initiative, and what's happening is it's enabling the Clintons to hose it down before the fact, and then they'll say it's old news. But here's the thing. I'm still not seeing any reasons being offered to vote for Republican candidates, because we're not getting to the why. We're not getting to the core of what the problem is. So while Clinton barnstorms with real policy initiatives, there's no response from the gaggle of pretend presidential candidates on the right. I'm just saying this is one of the problems with Republicans. Most of them don't have a clue about what they're about, with a few rare exceptions. Now, if you're one of them, your first reaction is probably defensive, but think about it. Just like someone asked me in a recent podcast, why do you do what you do? Ask yourself, what are you really about? What do you really want to do, and why? Why should people vote for Republicans? What about that? Do the candidates match your highest desires and concerns about the future of the country? Personally, I think we have a government which no longer protects the rights of Americans, which is what we had. We created a republic to protect the rights, which are outlined in the Constitution in both the first set of amendments as well as the, you know, explicit rights in the Constitution of the American people. The government was designed to protect those rights. The government doesn't do that anymore. The government is in everything. It is more interested in saving you and protecting you and controlling you and observing you and making sure it knows what you're doing and why you're doing what you're doing than it is actually defending your rights. And if our government was really dedicated to defending our rights, you wouldn't see all of this emphasis on personalities in politics, which then bleeds over to brand awareness for Republicans and Democrats and so forth. And a great example, and I love to dump on the IRS, and it is not because of the employees of the IRS, although we have to let them stand for consideration on their own performance, but because it's one of the best examples of a federal government gone rogue. As again, it doesn't protect our rights anymore. You know, we have a situation where ISIS is threatening Pam Geller, the instigator of the Draw Muhammad contest in Texas, and she hasn't even been contacted by Homeland Security to find out if she needs help. And no, it wasn't the federal government. It was local authorities and security down in Texas that protected the rights of those who attended the event to free speech. But somehow the government, the federal government, is unable to deal with it. You have plenty of examples, whether it's the DEA and Secret Service agents debauching themselves with Latin American whores while quote-unquote protecting the president or quote-unquote conducting the war on drugs. The DEA orgies were provided, in fact, by the very cartels that they were supposed to be investigating. And now it's reported that those people can't be fired because of government regulations. And then we get this one from the IRS. Despite the arrogant remonstrations of John Koskinen, the, quote, turnaround specialist running the IRS, which, by the way, didn't answer 8 million calls this year from citizens with tax questions, so apparently Koskinen has some turning around to do yet, the agency revealed this week that from 2004 to 2013, there were 130,000 suspected cases of tax violations by, are you ready, IRS employees. They concluded about 10% of these were actual violations. Don't even ask how they came up with that number. Of those 13,000 cases, 1,580 were found to be quote-unquote intentional cheaters, and you ask, oh, well, those people must have been fined or they must be in jail. What happened to those people? 60% of them, and again, I don't know where they come up with these numbers, but 60% of them were sent to managers for discipline, quote-unquote, and nothing was done, or they were actually promoted. No quotes. Managers never indicated on the paperwork that these were people who had cheated on their taxes, so they move forward in the shadows. People who are really tax cheaters. And what happens if you cheat on your taxes? Well, you get sent to jail. But IRS employees are rewarded. And this is an example of what is wrong with the federal government. It's what's wrong with government in general. If it isn't incompetence, it's corruption. And it's what happens when you have too much government in general that doesn't protect your rights, but that protects itself and the people in power, whether it is congressional Republicans voting to allow congressional staffs to be considered small businesses so that they don't have to sign up for Obamacare, whether it is MnDOT that can't seem to do any work unless it's from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. in drive periods, causing all sorts of havoc in Minneapolis and St. Paul traffic because they're idiots running them, or it's the DNR or the IRS or HHS or the NSA or MNsure, Homeland Security, the Pentagon, you name it. These agencies aren't protecting us. They aren't protecting our rights. They are protecting their power and the politicians who support it and what they can do about buying constituencies, whether there is an R or a D in front of their name, it doesn't matter. And these are the people who want to tell us we can't put up Christmas lights, we can't have signs in Times Square. Oh, yeah, that's true. They're telling us what to eat, and they're telling us how we should run our schools, how we should take care of our children from the moment they're born, and they want more and more money from us to regulate and control and build trains. This is why Bernie Sanders says we need a political revolution in this country, but we need one, just not the kind that he's talking about. And the problem is, Nobody's writing about it. Nobody's speaking out about it. No one is talking about it. The talk radio stations want to talk about beer and, they want to describe themselves as comedians. There's no dissemination of information, or they're just screaming and yelling and pounding and getting people upset. There isn't anyone speaking out about it. And there are no Republicans speaking out about it. There are no Democrats speaking out about it. And you wonder why Republicans have problems. Now, there are exceptions to the rule. There are candidates who are talking about this stuff. But this is our chief problem. Our chief problem is we have a government that isn't doing what it was supposed to do in the first place. And so every year, more and more control is built onto that infrastructure. We have more and more of what is referred to as a democratic government instead of a Republican government. And I don't mean by party. I'm talking about types of government. And more the mob decides through the media and through a complicit media what types of things we accept and don't accept. And we have to reverse that somehow. I could go on, but I won't, because I think it's a whole an ongoing question as to how. But this is the chief problem in our government, whether it's the transportation issue, the gas tax issue, or anything else. They're trying to protect their control and power. And once they get in there, no matter what they say to get elected, this is what ends up happening to them. So it becomes a question of whether people really understand how to control politics and what is going on with politics in this country, and just what kind of revolution it's really going to take to really change and create a sea change in U.S. politics, in Minnesota politics, to stop this stuff from happening and get them to leave us alone. So people always say, we love it when you rant. And sometimes I do like to rant. I wouldn't consider this whole thing a rant so much as what I'm trying to do is give you some controlled information that you're just not going to hear other places for you to think about. And as far as the mood of the country, the best thing I can tell you is pay attention to the movies, pay attention to the new shows, pay attention to the themes. I don't want to do a spoiler on Mad Men, but I was shocked to see Don Draper driving around the country, considering the fact that that's the whole point of the mobile podcast command unit. These things are probably more illuminating as to the mood of the country. These shows, like there's a new show called Daredevil or on Netflix, or House of Cards, or Justified, or Mad Men, or any of these big shows that that people are binge watching. They're probably more indicative of the mood of the country today than anything else. And I wouldn't call them Republican or Democrat shows. Just look at them and think about the themes that you're seeing. Think about the writing and the themes of these shows, because I think they're very, I watch them a lot, and I watch a lot of movies, because to me, they tell us a lot about what people are actually thinking that's not going to show up in the polls and so forth. So I know a lot of people that listen to the Bob Davis podcast, like me, are big fans of coffee and movies till dawn, and especially on the weekends. So watch Daredevil on Netflix. That's a great one. Longmire is a great one. Obviously, Mad Men is great. House of Cards, featuring a lot of soul heroes that are really sort of taking on the world by themselves. And I think that's kind of a theme. And I'll talk more about that in future podcasts, I guess. Thanks to Bachland R&D for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast, Podcast 366. Check out Bachland.com and find out what they're all about. Also, if you're interested in manufacturing, especially 3D printing and additive manufacturing, sign up for the webinar on June 2nd. John's going to be doing at BAKLUND.com, Bachland.com. And thanks, you guys, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcast. Got to thank the digital sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast.com, Mad Case Studios, which creates quality original automotive artwork. Some of it's right up there in the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcast.com. And I'm supposed to tell you that Mad K is going to be out at some of the antique auto shows this summer. I'm going to tell you more about those as we get closer to the events. Maybe the mobile podcast command studio will be there as well. Love those antique car shows. Click on these banners and others for more information about all of the sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast.com. I want to introduce you guys to Blog Talk Radio. It's just another way for you to get the podcasts. There's a you'll see it on the page at the Bob Davis Podcast.com. Blog Talk Radio. If you click on that, it it just plays automatically the last podcast that I uploaded. I know a lot of people are also listening on Stitcher.com, which is for Android devices. Of course, iTunes, which is the granddaddy of podcasts, or TuneIn. And thanks again for liking, sharing, favoriting, and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com. I'm letting that diesel fuel fund fill up to go out and cover some stories, especially the 2016 presidential cycle in our region. So please make a donation if you are interested in the podcast, if you like them. And I appreciate all you guys who have been donating to the podcast, whether it's $1 or $150. It blows me away every time. And thanks for listening to Podcast 366.